Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Fab Lab Tulsa is hosting its fourth Mini Maker Fair this Saturday. What is a Maker Fair? Well, it's been called the greatest show and tell on earth. Part science fair, part county fair, and part something else, according to organizers. The maker movement drives these events, a mixture of do-it-yourselfers working in high-tech, low-tech, traditional, and non-traditional craft and folk art. By and large, the community is passionate about what they're creating, be it science, engineering, art, performance, or craft, and love to talk about it, whether their creations are built in a shop, a garage, the kitchen table, or a cooperative high-tech facility like the Fab Lab. Maker Fairs now draw over 100,000 attendees and makers from around the world. The next one of those is scheduled for New York in October. But Mini Maker Fairs showcase a community's creative capital and output. You can see Tulsa's maker community in action this Saturday from 10 to 5 at the Expo Square Central Park Hall in the Free Mini Maker Fair. My guest today is the Executive Director of the Fab Lab Tulsa, Nathan Pritchett, to talk about this year's Mini Maker Fair. Nathan Pritchett, welcome back into Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It seems like it was not too long ago that we were talking about one of the very first Mini Maker Fairs in Tulsa, coming out of the Fab Lab. The Fab Lab in Tulsa is sponsoring that. Now you're on your fourth. For those who have never been to a Maker Fair or a Mini Maker Fair, what are they?
So a Maker Fair is kind of like a big show and tell. So you remember when you were in elementary school and every day someone would bring in something they'd made or something they were passionate about? It's very similar to that. The goal is to make visible the things you may not see every day. So our community is filled with interesting and fascinating people, whether they're hobbyists, whether they're professionals who have interest in crafts. It could be old world crafts like sewing, or it could be modern 21st century electronics. And we take all these groups and we have them all come out for one afternoon and one day in a space where our community can come out and really see what they do and talk to them about how they do it. And so in that regards, we really call it Oklahoma's largest show and tell.
Right. Except you're building and telling, really, in this
Absolutely.
Case. Absolutely. Or creating and telling. Now, some of these will have come through the Fab Lab itself, but I would say who you're drawing from is a much larger reach than just the Fab Lab, I would think.
That's very true. So a Maker Fair is bigger than Fab Lab. So as a Fab Lab, we focus on 21st century technology. So we use computers, software design, 2D and 3D design. We use laser cutters. We use 3D printers and mills. And it is a very modern take, and you will see projects like that, and there'll be several groups of people who are fab labbers and are showing off things they make. But a Maker Fair is really all-encompassing. You will see these more traditional crafts. You'll see wood turning. You'll see people who make wood bowls. And so it really is just anything and everything that you could imagine.
So it's like a craft fair. It's like a sort of high-tech fair. It's also sort of like gamers and things like that, and role-playing people who are coming out. So it's a little bit of everything. Are these all these different communities connected in a way?
Well, generally day-to-day, they're probably not, but this is the one day where we can connect them. So cosplay is definitely a big community.
Now, and, cosplay, you'll have to explain that.
Well, so imagine dressing up every day as an adult, or at least on the weekend. So we all used to dress up for Halloween.
Costume play.
Yeah, costume play. And so there are several groups like that. In fact, one of the most interesting, most exciting is we're going to have back for the second year the 501st Legion, which is a very sophisticated and savvy group of people that make their own Star Wars costumes. And they do them to a very, very high level, and they generally do them themselves. So they will be out at the Maker Fair, and they'll have a couple of different opportunities. One is they're actually going to be speaking on our stage. And so you can come out and you can hear how they make their costumes and what inspires them, which I think will be really interesting.
Now, do they make their own original costumes, or are they making copies of things they've seen from the movies, or a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. They're making their own versions. Mm-hmm. And so they will have, you could have robotics, like they'll have an R2-D2. Or it could be a version of Obi-Wan Kenobi. They won't look exactly like Obi-Wan Kenobi because they aren't Obi-Wan Kenobi. But they'll have a similar look and feel. And then some of the more interesting characters that we kind of talk about is, you know, that group of characters from the cantina.
Right. So they're doing extensive makeuping and things like that, and probably prosthetics.
Yes. You will see hands, faces, helmets, just anything you can imagine. And it's all basically just, as you said, designed for costume play.
And I would assume a lot of times they're having to manufacture like a uniform, like the costume parts of like a helmet or things like that themselves.
Yeah, they're building these from scratch, and they're generally building them to fit themselves. Wow. So it can be very interesting.
Well, so what is the aim of the participants in a maker fair? Is it basically somebody who's a tinkerer who wants to show off something they made, or is there business applications, prototypes for a possible business application, an entrepreneur, who exactly, or all of the above?
Yeah, so the maker community is really broad. So you will see everyone from an 8-year-old to an 80-year-old. You'll see tinkers and hobbyists. You'll see professionals. So one of the most exciting groups that will be out there is a local 3D printing company, Professional Image 3D Printing. And they'll have a couple of different technologies that you may not even be able to see in a fab lab. So we're talking about very advanced 3D printing and some newer technology.
Mm-hmm. And what sort of things would they be making with those 3D printers?
Well, that's the thing, is they could be working on almost anything. They could be working for a manufacturing company, rapid prototyping, something that we might see in the oil field, or they could be working on something oriented towards healthcare. It's really a broad, broad application base.
How's 3D printing really changed traditional fields like manufacturing? Because I would think that 3D printing allows you to do a lot of different prototypes without the whole startup tooling cost of getting the full-size product ready, and you sort of work it out on a micro level.
You're exactly right. So 3D printing today is really valuable for rapid prototyping. So it's a very fast, efficient, and effective way to put a part together for testing. It is not replacing traditional manufacturing yet. But for companies who might have had to form and mill and produce a part where they might spend several thousands of dollars producing it, they can produce something very similar for a few $100s, and they can produce it a lot quicker. So instead of having to send it off to someone for a week or two, they might be able to produce it in an afternoon, put it together, fit it. And so you're exactly right. It allows you to do this iteration more quickly, which makes companies more efficient.
Now, I would think they would use a 3D printer for creating the prototype of the part, and then once they have the part exactly the way they want it, then they go to the traditional manufacturing. Do they, as many places, do they just bypass that second step?
No, so you've nailed it on the head. So what they're doing is, and this is the real value of digital fabrication, so by drawing a part in 2D and 3D software, you can then put it onto a 3D printer or another digital fabrication machine. You can test it, evaluate it. Once you make the part, you can make small incremental changes or big changes because you've digitized it. And then once you have that part perfect, you can send that same exact file that you're locally sending to a printer to your manufacturer. You can send it overseas. You can send it down to your production plant, and they can start to produce 10,000, 10 million of that part once they've perfected it.
Well, my guest today is Nathan Pritchett. He is the executive director of Fab Lab Tulsa. Fab Lab Tulsa is hosting the fourth Tulsa Mini Maker Fair. Maker fairs are actually huge events, and I think there's one in the Silicon Valley. There's a couple others around the country. But many satellite sites will have these, what they call mini maker fairs. And ours takes place Saturday from 10 to 5 at Expo Square's Central Park Hall. Now, you're going to have some great sort of featured exhibitors, and I assume there will be a whole range of exhibitors. There'll be kids building stuff. There'll be old-time crafts people, furniture makers, quilters, lace makers, all that sort of stuff. But also, you're going to have some really interesting featured people, and one of them is a guy who built a submersible in his backyard.
Yes, we're talking about SV Seeker. This is a gentleman here in Tulsa. His name's Doug Jackson. He's pretty unique. There are not a lot of people who build ginormous boats in their yards, and he does that. He has built a submarine in the past, and right now he's building an undersea submersible that's a smaller component of his boat, and he's going to be bringing that out to the Maker Faire to show it and to tell people how he did it. And so you can imagine if you've ever seen one of those Discovery Channel shows.
Right. It's remote controlled. It goes down. It's got a camera on it and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So he's built his own.
Wow.
Yeah.
And is he manufacturing all of his parts here? Is he creating it from scratch? Is he working out of kits? And I assume that's the other thing, is some of these folks are working out of kits, right?
Some of them are. In this case, when you go over and visit with him, he's actually doing a lot of the forging himself. And so he does his own metalworking and his own woodworking. And so in that case, he's actually doing everything himself. I think it's part of the, you know, as a maker, if you can do it yourself, you like to try. And so while I'm certainly sure there's lots of parts that are just off the shelf, when it comes to these very specific components, he's able to manufacture and fabricate them on his own.
Tell us about some of the other folks that will be there.
So one of the most liked groups is Professor McCoy. So we'll have a stage set
up. Jerry McCoy, who teaches physics at the University of Tulsa.
Absolutely. So he will be back for his fourth year, and he'll be doing his physics show on the stage. I don't have all the exact times, but if you look at the Maker Faire Tulsa website, you can check out exactly what time will go on. He packs the house. Everyone comes out. So if you've got children, this would be a perfect time for them to come out and see some physics experiments. And every once in a while, I think he manages to squeeze an explosion in there, which can always be fun.
Well, and I know you're going to have a robotics team competition as well.
Yeah, we're really excited this year. We're going to have all eight of the Tulsa area robotics clubs and the first robotics from high school. We will have them set up, and they'll each have their own pits. And so you can come by and visit each school in the pits. And we also have enough room for them to set up a half course. So they're actually going to be competing during the day. We didn't have quite enough room to do the entire course, but they're going to be doing some modified versions of the national competitions and local competitions they would do.
So would these be locomoting sort of competitions? So you build a robot and you see how well it's able to move across a course of some sort?
Yes. So with FIRST Robotics, they generally have a very specific challenge. It could be to move from A to B. It could be to pick up an item. It could be to move an item from A to B. And each year they change that to keep it unique and keep people moving and keep people thinking about new things. Generally, the FIRST Robotics season will kick off here as school kicks off. And so what they'll be doing is probably last year's competition. But they generally set up very specific courses, and there's a very specific task that they're asked to do. And so it'll be exciting. What we're really excited about is we started a couple of years ago. We had one school. We had the Booker T. Washington High School. But this year, we're very proud to get eight high schools. So it's going to be a really interesting afternoon. And they'll be competing all day.
When we think of the maker movement, one of the oldest areas is like model design or remote-controlled cars, and now drones. You're going to have examples of those. But you're also going to have people who are making full-size cars. The art cars.
Yes. So if anyone has visited with Charlie Larson and the Art Cars of Tulsa group, you'll see them around town, especially in May, around Mayfest.
Oh, right.
So they're going to be bringing out two or three examples of their art cars. And you might even see an art scooter in there somewhere. And so this is just another example of makers making for pleasure and for, you know, just to feel good about themselves and to kind of bring light to the day. And as you're driving around, you just see something you don't see every day. And so they'll be out there and they'll be displayed as well. And talking about drones, we're really excited. So this year we're going to have a group called Urban RC Hobbies. And they're actually going to be setting up a course for both drones and RC car races. So we've all probably seen some of these new drones. We've seen them around. We may have even played with them. And drone racing is something that's very exciting, is coming about. So this will probably be most people's first chance here in Tulsa to come and actually see a drone race.
My guest today is Nathan Pritchett. He's the executive director of Fab Lab Tulsa. Fab Lab Tulsa is hosting their fourth Tulsa Mini Maker Faire this Saturday from 10 to 5 at Expo Square's Central Park Hall. And the greatest news about it, it's absolutely free. You do ask that folks register in advance if they're coming, just so you know how many people are going to be showing up. And I assume there'll be a mix of demonstrations, looks like some competitions going on, as well as exhibits.
Yes, absolutely right. So we will have exhibitors. We have 70 exhibitors this year, which is an improvement from years past. Mm-hmm. So we're glad that more people are coming out and sharing what they do. We'll have a stage area set up right in the middle of the event stage where you'll be able to come and sit down, and we'll have stage presentations such as Professor McCoy, the 501st Legion, Star Wars cosplay. We'll be doing those things on that stage. We will have the FIRST Robotics course set up in its own corner. And then we'll have that RC drone and RC car course set up towards the back of the building. And you're exactly right. So we do have an Eventbrite page, and if people register, they can register ahead of time. They can also register when they come in to the event, and it does help us kind of get a gauge for how many people to expect, and that way we know what the traffic will look like. The other thing that's nice about registration is we have some great, amazing door prizes. So by registering, not only do you let us know that you're coming, but we will put you into a door prize, and we'll pull those on the Monday afterwards. And they're generally, we actually will probably be giving away a drone.
Oh, wow.
And so when you come out, you can take a look at that prize table and see what you might be able to walk away with.
The other thing is the Maker Faires involve everything from food to, you know, all sorts of things you wouldn't think of. What are some of the things you wouldn't think of as being a part of a Maker Faire that is a part of a Maker Faire?
Food is one of the ones that's new, and we have one of our favorite Fab Lab clients and members that's actually going to be coming out, a gentleman named Rick Busey with Kaya Chocolate. He uses our lab to make his molds for his chocolate bars.
Oh, uh-huh.
And so he's going to be doing bonbons, I believe. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to come out and have a little taste of his the chocolate that he makes himself in-house. And so sometimes people are surprised by food as makers. I think the other thing is that there'll be a couple of children's exhibits that we've set up. The Tulsa Children's Museum will be coming out as well. And we'll have some things just as simple as, you know, using PVC pipe to make marshmallow gun shooters and things like that. I think that's the biggest thing is that we are all makers. You know, we all begin as makers. When we go to kindergarten, we start with building blocks. And then we graduate up to Legos. And then eventually we move up into manufacturing jobs and making oil and gas equipment and large-scale bridges and roads.
Now, out of these three previous Mini Maker Faires, have there been any success stories of somebody who like got exposure for something they've been building and all of a sudden now they're sort of taking an avocation into a vocation?
So there have been examples of that. A lot of people and a lot of young businesses will use this as a chance to show some of the things they make. One of the groups we had last year was a club called the BA Astronomy. And so they're a simple group of astronomy. And what they were working on at the time was how to do an outreach program to the blind. And how do you teach astronomy to someone without sight? And they actually made some contacts at the fair and were able to move that into a product that they're now moving and making as part of outreach
program. Sort of like a Braille astronomy chart?
It is. It's essentially a Braille version of astrological formations. Hmm. And so they're able to put that together because they had an interest and a passion and great knowledge, and they just happened to meet someone that bridged that gap.
Mm-hmm. You're doing the same thing with the Fab Lab in Tulsa all the time. Are there new businesses coming out of the Fab Lab, or at least somebody, you know, entrepreneurs that are getting started from using the facilities there?
Yes, we see a wide range of entrepreneurs. We see everything from Etsy store owners, someone who might be working from home and making a simple product. We see large manufacturers who might be doing what we call skunkworks projects, where they're just trying to get engineers out of their comfort level and into a space where they can be more creative. And everything in between. What's interesting about entrepreneurs is that they tend to be self-focused, which they should be, and they may appear on a TV show, and they may appear in front of a startup competition, but they don't pitch Fab Lab as being, you know, the reason that they make it. And so you would be surprised at how many of them are out there. In fact, going back 3 years with this Tulsa Startup Series, I believe there was 9 or 10 awards given out during that time. And so 5 of those awards were given to Fab Lab Tulsa members. Mm. So if we were in baseball and we were batting, we'd be batting better than 500. That's kind of amazing. But because of their interest, they don't often promote that. And we actually don't ask them to. So we're kind of like the Intel on the inside or the BASF commercial where we're in the background, we're an enabler, and we're helping facilitate them. But because it's still DIY, they still have to put in the sweat equity, and they still own the rights, and they own the product they're making.
Yeah, they're just using your facilities, and that's the way it was designed, correct?
Absolutely. That's exactly the way it was designed.
Now, is it becoming so popular that you're running out of space in your own area, or do you have plenty of space at the Fab Lab?
No, we do not have enough space. So if you've been over there, you know it's getting tighter. And so one of the things that we know we need to do over time is we need to add new workstations and new capabilities. It has been interesting. When we began, our community didn't quite have the skills to use all the equipment we had. And it really did take about a year and a half, just for the people here in Tulsa to start to learn what it was like. And since then, we've seen a massive explosion in the scale and the complexity and the sophistication of projects coming out of the lab, which is what we always hoped for. And now we know that they're ready, and our community here in Tulsa is ready for this next level.
So what does a facility like the Fab Lab and being able to put on mini maker fairs, what does that do for the engineering and technological prowess of a city like Tulsa? Does it really expand it, you think?
It does, and really it's key. In fact, we've seen some interesting things happen lately. For example, we've had some companies that are recruiting engineering students out of college from other states. And when they bring them to Tulsa to tour their facility, they also bring them by Fab Lab to show them that this resource is available. So it really is important. This idea of a maker movement and this idea that we need to kind of take back control of product making and product development and manufacturing is really, really critical to a city's success. What we've seen over the last kind of 10 or 15 years is a move away from doing it yourself or making for yourself and really manufacturing things ourselves. And we certainly have great manufacturers here in Tulsa, but we've kind of drifted into this consumer-based economy where, for example, we have kids where we're telling them, just keep buying that cell phone. Don't worry about how it was made
or
the
parts
that were in
it. Don't worry about fixing
it. Yeah, definitely don't fix it. And so that's really kind of the wrong take. And I have my own personal story for my house. My wife watches TV in our kitchen. She likes to watch the news. And one day we came home and the TV had fallen off the wall and was laying on the floor. None of my children would take responsibility for it. No one knows how it happened. Maybe the dog did it. But in the past, we would have taken that TV, put it in the garage. We would have, a few months later, probably taken it to Goodwill. But with this kind of change in attitude, we end up taking it to the Fab Lab, getting a screwdriver, opening it up, taking it apart. And it turned out that it was a simple soldering fix. The fix took about 5 minutes. And we took that product, we took that TV back home, hung it back on the wall, and it works perfectly. And so this is kind of what we're talking about when we talk about, you know, owning what you have and being able to fix it, maintain it, and also just generally knowing what's inside of there. We all carry around a cell phone, and none of us know what the components of a cell phone are. And when you start to break them down, they're actually pretty simple. You've got a battery, an input-output device, some memory, and an antenna. It's really not that complicated.
Yeah, that's a sign of the times that manufacturers don't want people to repair things. They want them to buy new ones.
Yes.
And I think there's something sort of innately American about fixing something as opposed to discarding it and buying a new one.
Absolutely. And soldering is just as a skill is something we should be teaching all of our students to do. That's one of the things I think that's really valuable. So in our youth education programs we're doing at Fab Lab Tulsa, we know that for the past few years, as part of our education system, we've been teaching students essentially to recall knowledge. And so as we've had this test-taking focus, we've basically been rewarding students who can memorize and recite. And one of the things that we talk about, though, is, yes, it's important to understand, to have this knowledge, to recite this knowledge, and to be able to recall it. But we should also be giving equal credit to the ability to utilize what we know.
Yeah, manipulate,
yes.
Utilize mechanical, you know, mechanical intelligence. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. And so what we've actually seen it is, we've seen it as a great equalizer. So we will come into a classroom with a project like this where we might be soldering and building a simple circuit board and using a laser cutter. And so you'll have a kid who has been very good at test taking, and then you put a soldering iron in their hand, and all of a sudden this is a new skill for them. So they tend to need to learn something, and it's like, okay, I want you to apply these math lessons. So it's not just learning math because we're going to take a test. It's because we're going to use it this afternoon. But what it also does is that child that may not be the best test taker tends to thrive when you don't ask them to recite and you just ask them to apply their skills. And so it's really important that as a society, we start to recognize the value of both of these. And part of a Maker Faire and part of a Fab Lab really allows that to come back up as why it's so important for us as a society.
Nathan, thanks very much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Nathan Pritchett is the executive director of the Fab Lab Tulsa, which is co-sponsor for the Mini Maker Faire. Tulsa's fourth annual takes place this Saturday from 10 to 5 at the Expo Square Central Park Hall. Admission is free, but attendees are encouraged to register. You can register at MakerFairTulsa.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Mark Dara.
In the wilds of Amazonia, near the Yasuni River of Ecuador, native Kichwa families gather daily between 3 and 4 a.m. to discuss the dreams they have had through the night. These ancient rainforest dwellers look to their sleep life for wisdom, direction, importance of the future. This is a sacred time for these Kichwa, a time when the spirits of the jungle speak. People of industrial cultures rarely show such deference. We tend to dismiss our nighttime imaginings as inconsequential or strange. We remember nightmares or pleasant dreams, but the others too often disappear into the ether. Science has yet to conclusively determine why people dream. Research suggests dreaming converts the recollection of daily events and short-term thoughts into long-term memories. Some authorities believe dreams provide a means to work through the problems and paradoxes of conscious life. Others see dreams as a way of clearing the brain of excess electrical charges, kind of like when one reboots a computer. Empirical investigation continues. Questions remain. Treating our dreams simply as psychological or physiological events diminishes their significance, though. Novelist Robert Owen Butler writes, "Art does not come from ideas. Art does not come from the mind. Art comes from that place where you dream." In other words, art comes from those places of chaos and the strange happenings of our sleeping visions. Paying attention to one's dreams may be the most important thing a person can do to foster imagination. Dreams prompt us to see things we've never seen before, to meet people who only appear in night images, to experience events that can only happen in places of the unreal. Our terror and our ecstasy reside here. Our dreams constitute our own personal fiction. To dream is an act of creativity. To remember one's dreams honors that creativity and helps incorporate that same spirit into conscious life. Consider writing down your dreams upon awakening. For Shakespeare was correct. Our dreams, even those most vivid and real, are insubstantial pageants that melt and dissolve into thin air. Our nighttime visions disappear if not memorialized by waking actions. If you keep a record, you will soon have a collection of the unusual and strange and wonderful that is uniquely yours, that tells your story in its own inexplicable way. If dreams are our attempt at creating personal narratives, should we not consider them as we do fiction? What is the author saying to us? What other meanings are here besides the obvious? What can I learn from this story? Best of all, how would I finish this tale? When someone says, "I'm not creative," I ask, "What do you dream? What do you dream?"
Mark Dara is a Tulsa attorney and writer and the author of a collection of essays, A Catalog of Common People. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.